Hello and welcome to the Elsnerds Show, the show on the Elsnerds Network, soon to be over at Galactic Netcast, where we talk about everything that interests our nerdy little hearts. I should probably actually work on a full intro for that or something. I'm Gregor Sprague, and joining me as always is Corey Scott. Corey, how you doing?
I am doing much better than I was doing last week, which yes. was a horrific mess, which is why we didn't do a beta episode last week.
That and the fact that you were over on... it was the Podcast of Terror night over on Trivia Geeks.
Well, that was on Tuesday, which I think we were going to skip, but Monday I was sick. Tuesday I was still pretty sick and muted my way through a lot of it and did nothing to help my unfortunate teammate get us through that game. And then Wednesday we talked about doing the show, and I think we all kind of collectively went, maybe we skip this week.
Yeah, which is fine and understandable, you know? Yeah, we try. But like I said, this is the show where we talk about basically whatever's on our mind, what we've been watching, reading, playing, listening to. And I want to start off with, sort of a little tribute send-off thing, to two greats in the musical industry that passed away since our previous episode that we had. You have, Lemmy Kilmister from, God, why am I blanking on the name?
I'm just going to let you struggle with it.
Yeah. God, thanks, you ass. from Motorhead. From Motorhead. All I had was Ace of Spades. I'm like, fuck, what's the name of this band? From Motorhead passed away. And again, like I said, Ace of Spades is their probably one of their big hits. And them, I mean, besides the fact that they did Triple H's and have done Triple H's entrance music forever, it seems like, in the WWE, they were one of three tracks I would play on, I think it was Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. It was like,
yes.
It was Ace of Spades and then Ring of Fire. And I cannot think of the third one. But it's like those three, the other songs, I'm like, whatever, I don't want to hear them. I might throw in one of the other ones, like, yeah, let's give it a little listen to. Nope, I'm done. Like, let's go back to Ace of Spades, Ring of Fire, and the third song that I cannot remember because it's been so long since I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3.
In the midst of my illness, I did break out the Xbox, and I tried playing Mega Man, which I never really got to play when it was out on the Nintendo. A friend of mine always rented the Mega Man games, and I'd be over at his house on the weekend and watch him play it, but I never got to play. So I was like, oh, I'm going to try to play Mega Man, and then after a while, I'm like... oh, this is hard as shit. I'm not going to try to play Mega Man anymore. So I went and I grabbed a bunch of my old Tony Hawk games for the Xbox, and I popped them in there. And Tony Hawk 2 is a just pain in the ass. So I moved over to Tony Hawk 4, where it started to kind of develop a little bit more.
Well, the first Tony Hawk game was, like, in comparison, was garbage.
I played the first Tony Hawk game on the Nintendo we had at my work at Best Buy in our break room. That's what got me into the games to begin with.
Yeah.
And then they went backwards and started making reissues of the old games for the Xbox.
Yeah.
But Tony Hawk 3 and Tony Hawk 4 and things like that, and the Tony Hawk Underground game started out on the Xbox and moved up from there.
Yeah, I think 2 was sort of a step up, but I think it was 3 that really was the kickstarting one. Like, I think that was the one where they had Bam. It was, they burned it as Bam Margera versus Tony Hawk and all that.
And they started changing up the options and what you needed to do to get through each level.
Yeah.
It made it more intense. And I mean, that's the thing, is that they had to go backwards to make those old games pop over to the system.
Yeah.
So they were obviously limited comparatively as what we were doing at that point. And then this year, this last year, at the end of it, the new Tony Hawk game came out and was the worst reviewed game of the year. I think it got less love than the Batman Arkham game got for the PC.
Interesting you mentioned this, because did it get worse reviews than Tony Hawk Ride?
I believe it did, actually. Tony Hawk Ride got a lot of shit reviews because of the controller aspect of it. But this was just like, they didn't give a goddamn that they were putting their names on this game. It was just total under crap. And I feel terrible about that because I want new Tony Hawk games. I keep seeing the skate games for sale super cheap now, and I keep thinking maybe I should try those out.
Skate?
It's not Tony Hawk.
Skate 2 was good. Like, the first Skate was a little too stuck in story mode before you could unlock stuff. Where Skate 2, you had that as well, but you could find, like, it wasn't too hard to unlock everything or to unlock all this stuff and just skate, just go around. The problem I had going to it is they did go more realistic with it. So it's like with me, because I always did the cheat code for the moon physics and all that stuff. So it's like I'm sitting there, oh, he's doing like a 53 million or whatever. Or there was the one level in Tokyo, and it was in the Tokyo level where you jumped up and you'd go to the corner of the map and then bounce back.
Right,
like it was a glitch. But the skate games are pretty good, especially if you're finding them cheap. It is worth it. It's got the ESPN tie-in. Because they do they mention the X Games, or they basically mention the X Games with their stuff.
But the last one to come out was Skate 3, and that was several years ago, and now there's nothing like those games out anymore. I think that's too bad.
Yeah, and I don't know why, honestly, because, I mean, they were good selling games. And good reviewed.
But they started trying to trick you. They started doing things, like you said, with Ride. They gave you the stupid controller for the Wii. They started basically losing. I think by the time we got to Underground, the stories got a little bit more over-focused compared to just being able to skate and play the game. And I liked the freeform aspect of it. I liked the continuous world aspect of it. They started getting that in there.
Yeah.
But I just kind of wanted to play the Tony Hawk game, and it became more and more of like building up your reputation and building up the player and seeing all these cutscenes and stuff. And that really wasn't what the game was about for me. So I think that it went so far into one direction that they need to kind of bring it back and develop as a skating game again, and just give you a bunch of cool places to skate and a bunch of cool challenges in those places and just let you have fun with it again. Plus, this is a big one. You have to keep the creative skater, and you have to make sure that it covers both genders. Because my wife, every time that game came out, that was what she would do. She'd sit there and she'd spend an hour or so designing her character, and then she'd start playing. And she'd kick my ass every time at Tony Hawk. There were times that I bought the Tony Hawk game the day it came out, and I'd take it home, and I'd get to play with it for like a half hour, and then the next day I'd be at work, and she would call me up and say, I beat the game already. And I would just be totally pissed, like a $60 game beaten a day. That ain't right. But be that as it may, good thing to have around when you're sick. Yeah. But you're right. Lemmy, the Motorhead Ace of Spades was one of those things that you heard a ton during that game. And then, of course, today we got the other bad news, which is what I woke up to this morning, and that was the loss of David Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually added too, because I had to go. I got called into work over at another Dollar General. Hooray! Actually, I do have to watch what I say because the manager of that store knows my mom fairly well. But no,
it's fun. Not a bad thing to let people know that you actually like your job.
No,
want to keep working there and get paid and shit.
Yeah, but. Okay, so I'll phrase it this way. You live over in California, and I'm pretty sure in your town there is that sketchy part of town. Because
it's usually where I live.
Yeah, so basically, imagine me working at the Dollar General where you live. Where people go, oh, you don't want to go over there, that's sketchy. You know, that's where the hoodlums are at and all that stuff. That was the one that I was working at today. It wasn't fine because I was in the morning. I'm like, I'm sitting there doing my work, and I put the air quotes in there because I was supposed to be pulling stuff off the top shelves and stuff. And I'm like, the cops are over there arresting someone. Why do they have two state guys and a county, or in the sheriff, arresting this guy?
Well, first of all, you can't say that you're working in a sketchy area. I mean, sketchy areas that I grew up with, the cops don't show up. So,
but
you
that's Detroit sketchy. That's Detroit.
That's right. This is preach.
This is the out of, you know, small town South Central Michigan. Like this, it's that sketchy. Like
South Central Michigan, not like South Central California, no. Which is not where I live, but. Just keeping it real. Yeah, so woke up to... I'd been seeing posts about David Bowie throughout the weekend, not least of which because his new album just dropped. I listened to it today on the way to work, the new Black Star album, which very much kind of paints the picture of... He knew for the last 18 months that he was dealing with cancer, and he knew pretty much that this was not going to... be something that he recovered from, and he managed to make or put out three albums in that amount of time, and that's kind of amazing, but it's very Bowie. It's a very Bowie thing to do, and I really appreciate a guy who can sit and put so much of himself out there and to put the kind of last note in on what his life is and the last things that he wants to say and not make a big deal out of it to tell people, oh, this is happening to me, and, you know, but to just let the artwork speak for itself afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of amazing. And I'm not going to say that I'm, like, the biggest Bowie fan in the world, but I think everybody's, certainly from certain generations, everybody is a Bowie fan in some way or another because he's just been integrated in so many things that we've listened to or watched or grew up with in some way. Like, I might recognize him from 80s music like China Girl and Let's Dance and Changes, but then I've heard some of the Ziggy Stardust stuff, I've heard some of the earlier stuff, but then you remember things like he was, you know, the Goblin King in Labyrinth, or he shows up in the later seasons of the Venture Brothers. You know, he was an actor. He was in Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me. Everything he showed up in, he was still David Bowie. You were mentioning before the show that he was in Zoolander. I was explaining that to somebody at work today. She's like, he was in Zoolander? I'm like, yeah, when they do the whole walk-off thing and the two tribes go to war, David Bowie's the one who's walking through that. He's just kind of this amazing dude who has done so many different things, been prolific at everything that he's done. And he's kind of the uber nerd. I mean, he's a guy who is been involved in sci-fi and fantasy and, you know, rocked the transgendered look before anybody had a concept of that. He was just so many things. And to lose somebody like that is hard, but to also get to still have them be what they are and have their art to always draw from and go to is kind of incredible, and we're very lucky for that.
No, yeah, definitely. See, this is usually why I bring these things up, because you say the smart stuff and it's me and I'm just like, yeah, okay, there's nothing else I can really add, let's move on.
There are people who love Bowie that are going to have a lot more to say about him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't want to act like I have a lot to say. I just know that you wake up in the day and you think, oh, crap, you know, David Bowie's not around anymore, and you don't realize how much that's going to impact you until it impacts.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can really add to this is with you talking about his last album that what released, like, what, last week or something?
Yeah.
This reminds me of when Johnny Cash passed, and then American 4, like, was released, like, the night before he passed or something like that. And how it was, and the big single was his cover of Her.
Yeah.
That one touched me. I don't know about your Tupac there. I don't listen to the, I didn't listen to Hippity Hop back then.
Besides, Tupac's not dead, bitch. but yeah, I was thinking about it also. When Freddie Mercury passed away, it was a big deal, but it was one of those things that I knew Queen from the Flash soundtrack. I knew Queen from the Highlander soundtrack. I'd listened to their stuff, But again, it didn't really hit me, and I became much, much more of a Queen and Freddie fan in the years that followed.
Yeah.
Than when he was alive. So that moment of, oh, Freddie Mercury passed away, oh, that's really sad. But then it gave me this excuse to explore Queen's music and to find out more about them. And of course, as we've gone on and on, we've realized how much of a genius that Freddie Mercury is. And I have a feeling I'm going to go down that same road with David Bowie more. I downloaded most of his stuff today just to be able to kind of immerse myself in it. I tried Ziggy Stardust about 2 years ago. I listened to it because I wanted to kind of get in that Bowie mode and see what I know so many people have been into.
Yeah.
But I know that these are people that I'm finding out late, and I was trying to figure out, well, who's the guy that is to me, you know, if it happened tomorrow, what would impact me the most? What would be that, like, oh, this is my artist? And I realized that it's Jeff Lynne from Electric Light Orchestra and from the Traveling Wilburys and from just so many different things. I mean, he's produced music, he's done his own stuff and everything. But I've always loved ELO. I mean, since I saw Xanadu, I've just gone through and through, like, listening to their music. And he kind of reminds me of my dad for some reason. I don't know why exactly. But he's the guy that if I was going to put an album together, he would produce it, he would sing on it. And I would just basically, like, make Jeff Lynne make another Jeff Lynne album. And I realize that that's my guy, but for so many people, you know, Bowie has been that person, or yeah, Freddie has been that person, or John Lennon was that person. And I loved the Beatles growing up too, but it was like the Beatles as a whole. I know people who were just like totally John Lennon-ified. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. Music touches us a specific way. It gets into our heads and our hearts deeper than almost anything else can. And like I said, the thing with Bowie is that he did all of that, and on top of that, he did all these other things too. And it's a deep loss for the nerd community, but I loved the fact that everybody that I saw posting about it, and I mean everybody I know posted about it today, what they were saying was, yeah, but you don't post anyways, Dick. what they said... And the way that they came across about it was much more uplifting than down. I mean, there was that initial, oh my God, we lost, you know, a beloved figure, rest in peace, all that stuff. But so much more of it was artistic, and things that he said, or lyrics from his music, or artwork that's been inspired by him, any number of amazing things. And I think that that's really wonderful. And again, you know, he kind of controlled what his last message was to the world, but I think that what the people are going to do to create what they want that message to mean and what they want the message to continue to be, I think that's an even bigger thing, and I think that's something that he would be incredibly proud of. So, yeah, I got a lot of love for David Bowie, but I've got a lot of love more for the impact that he's made and for the people who are still around that grew from him.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about a podcast, because with this being the Else Nerds show, this isn't What Else Is On. This isn't, you know, 616. This is sort of everything. Evan brought up the idea of talking about podcasts, and I'm like, well, what podcasts are we going to talk about that's not going to sound like, oh, I'm fanboying over here.
But we fanboy about everything, to be completely fair.
But I mean, it was Beat's idea. Sorry, Beat. I attributed it to, I gave credit to the wrong producer on that. It was Beatmasters. But like, my thought was, okay, first off, what podcast am I listening to? And it's like a lot of Scott Johnson stuff.
Definitely.
A lot of like Coverville, you know, We Have Concerns and stuff like that. But then I remembered this as the one British podcast I'm watching, or actually not watching, listening to, called No Such Thing as a Fish. And this is the QI Elves. If you've ever watched QI, the show hosted by Stephen Fry will be hosted by someone in next series, someone completely different because he's moving on from that. Which actually I realize is an interesting spot where he's ending. This is a side note, because he's ending at the halfway point of the alphabet. And so that makes me think, okay, if it continues on with her, we could have almost this rotational thing, which it just would be like, okay, only if only people didn't age, sort of thing. Like,
exactly.
He gets the first half of the alphabet, she gets the second, sort of deal. But anyways, No Such Thing as a Fish, it's hosted by the QI elves, the researchers of QI, and every week they give you their four main facts that they found over the past 7 days. And it's just, I'm sitting here laughing and then going, oh, hey, I learned something new right there, while laughing, because they're explaining the story. And then they'll give you facts that are related to that story. Maybe because like, oh, I wish I could remember what any of the facts right now, but like, here's one of the facts that, Monte Carlo, the city of Monte Carlo, where they do the, not Monte Carlo, Monaco, where they do the Grand Prix. If everyone were to get in their car and drive and get on the road, there would not be enough road in the town of Monaco for all the people that have cars there. And so with that fact, they explain it a little bit, and then they expand upon it by talking about cars or talking about Monaco or talking about other cities like that. They've done that a little bit with Stonehenge, and they've even had guests on there, and the guests are brilliant too. It's like just smart and funny, like scientists, and you're like, wow, this is really good. And then you're like, oh, hey, I'm learning stuff. It's not exactly stuff you're going to use in everyday life, but it's stuff, and it's awesome. So that's one that I definitely think you should go check out. You can find it on Stitcher, iTunes, all this stuff. It's also on their website at qi.com. Where
QI is such a great show, too. Yeah. And it is that exactly. I mean, it's something that you laugh your way through, because the people involved are just so hilarious, but at the same time, you're learning a bunch of stuff all at once. It's a really brilliant program. We've compared it to American game shows before, and not found that it treats the Americans in a very nice favor. It's like, oh yay, we whammy.
yeah. To compare it to American television is to realize that American television is dumb.
I mean, not completely. I watch Jeopardy every day with Alex Trebek, and that's obviously a thinking show. And then it's followed up by Wheel of Fortune, which is the, I don't really want to be on Jeopardy, but give me something I can play with letters on.
Yeah.
And nothing is better, and I reaffirmed this to myself last week, is playing hooky from school or work and staying home and getting to watch The Price is Right. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. That is what it's all about, man. And to this day, Drew Carey, thank you for keeping that going for me, man, because I needed to see the yodeler fall off the side of the mountain.
And oh, they're doing it live. They do it live touring. I saw the commercials like, what, they do it live? What, huh?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that, if they mix up Who's Line with... With Price is Right, that can be pretty terrific.
Which I think they did for a little bit there. They like before they settled on, I cannot think of who the announcer is right now, but they had I can't think of his name either. Brad from Who's Line.
Nice.
Brad Sherwood. That's it. Like they had Brad Sherwood like right at the beginning of Drew Carey's career, and then it went like I think it was actually when George Gray just pulled that name out of my butt there. When George Gray, he was taking a break or something.
Oh, now like the name's all sticky and weird. Yeah, also, I mean, if you follow it up, you've got Let's Make a Deal with Wayne Brady
and Jonathan Mayer.
And Jonathan, who also has been with the Who's Line crowd and everything, so it's a nice double feature there.
Oh, yeah. But also, again, No Such Thing as a Fish. Great podcast. Check it out. Now let's go to Turbo Kid.
Yeah, and this is almost a double feature, although it wasn't something that I exactly planned. It kind of worked out that way. So last week, maybe it was even before that. Yeah, because I was going to talk about this on last week's show. I've been looking forward to seeing this movie for a while since I saw a preview for it. Right around the time that there was that Kung Fury video that came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was a short that was online and had the great David Hasselhoff video. I saw a preview for this, and it was another one of those things that looks like a throwback to the 80s. This movie looks essentially like a Mad Max Road Warrior movie, except with a teenage kid on a BMX bike. And it's a joint production between Canada and New Zealand, and it stars Monroe Chambers,
who is
from Degrassi. And also Lawrence LeBouf, who I didn't recognize from anything, but she is fantastic in this. And Michael Ironside, who is pretty much the bad guy in everything. I remember Michael Ironside, the first time I saw him was in the TV series V, and he was actually one of the good guys on V, but it seems like ever since then, he's just got that gruff exterior and that raspy voice and everything that they keep putting him as the bad guy and stuff. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, the other super nice guy from V wound up playing Freddy Krueger. But that's neither here nor there. So Michael Ironside and Monroe Chambers, and this is a total throwback kind of movie. It's out in what looks like the Australian outback, but it's in New Zealand. And it's this kid who is trying to survive on his own in a post-apocalyptic world. They are fighting for water as the big main resource that they don't have. And he collects this comic called Turbo Man that he gets from the guy that he gathered scrap for and everything. And he gets kind of named Turbo Kid as it goes on. At some point, he does find the corpse of Turbo Man and gets his weaponry and his armor and stuff. But he goes to try to rescue this girl that he finds, Apple, who becomes his only friend in this world. She gets kidnapped by Michael Ironside's Zeus character. And it's just crazy, over-the-top, hyper-violence. People are getting sent through this big machine to drain them of all their water. So they're getting all just, like, chopped up to bits and everything, and then they collect the liquid and make drinkable water from it. But as you're watching this, like, people are getting their heads chopped off or kicked off, or one person gets chopped in half and half of his body goes on to another person and the other half of his body goes on to a different person. And so this guy's standing there with, like, these legs over top of his head. It's just bizarre, fun, dumb stuff. I was telling Erin, I'm like, you know, we're going to watch this. And she's like, why? I said, you'll see. And then as soon as she saw that it was Monroe Chambers from Degrassi, she's like, oh, he's from Degrassi. I'm like, yeah, and we got to do it. And then the character of Apple is amazing in this. She's just so funny and has got that great kind of outlook of, you know, just completely positive and stuff, but still winds up helping him kick ass. The fact that it's Mad Max on BMX bikes, I mean, you can't really get much more 80s than that. One of the things that I remember watching the 80s a lot was a New Zealand movie called BMX Bandits, which was the first thing I ever saw Nicole Kidman in.
I was just going to mention that because as you're describing this, I'm like, oh, like that movie Nicole Kidman was in that I totally know about but never saw.
Yeah, I used to watch that all the damn time. I think she's the only person from that movie that did anything. And by did anything, I mean Tom Cruise. But it was a great goddamn movie. And so this is, it's a mix of those two things. We watched it through Google Play. I have so many credits through Google Play. And then they gave us like 75% off a rental or something. So I threw this up there. Definitely don't regret it at all. It was a hilarious time. But to follow it up, over the weekend I saw that Mad Max Fury Road is now on HBO this month. So I recorded that and we watched that last night. I've not watched a lot of the Mad Max movies. I, of course, have a knowledge of Road Warrior and Thunderdome, but it's not like they were ever my favorite movies. I would rather watch Prayer for the Roller Boys or Solar Babies than the Mad Max films. But this was a really great, kick-ass movie. And again, I put it on. Erin was in the room, wound up watching it with me. And it was just nuts, and it never slowed down. And the acting was very good in it. All the creature work and stuff was great. The War Boys were just insane the whole thing through it and stuff. I enjoyed this movie far more than I thought I would. And now this is, again, this is people like, well, you were saying Scott Johnson earlier. He's been raving about this movie all year. A lot of other people have said just great things about it. So this is my first chance to actually sit down and watch it. I was glad that we have a nice big TV and a decent enough sound system to do it some justice. I would definitely watch this again. I don't know it's going to be one of my go-to movies. Like, I keep watching the same crap over again, but those are usually terrible films. But it was definitely a good watch, and it was even more fun to watch it with the comparisons of Turbo Kid to Mad Max to kind of get that. And the same thing, you know, there's a point where they're trying to get water. The big things that are water and gasoline in this, I guess they don't need gasoline if they're riding BMX bikes in the other movie. But way fun, way intense. Love Charlize Theron's character and the brides that they were trying to save throughout the whole thing. Really great, great fun movie. So yeah, if you have the opportunity, do a double feature. I think that it would be a great fun time to do.
Yeah, no, cool. So we're going to take a quick break. And first, we're going to do a quick little plug for Galactic Nightcast, because we will be moving over there very, very soon. We're still trying to figure out all the fine little tweaks that we got to make before we do finally get over there. But hey, check them out, gncast.com, Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Adventure Party. I'll talk about them more at the end, but really great programming. Check them out, gncast.com. And now it's on to our curtain calls and skipping all the what's coming to Netflix and leaving Netflix, because I only do that once a month, and going right to On the Air. Starting with tomorrow, January 12th, you have at 8 p.m. on CW the one-hour special presentation of the Mad TV 20th anniversary reunion.
Thank God for you, because I completely forgot that was happening.
And then at 9 p.m. on Freeform, used to be ABC Family, now it's Freeform, is the series premiere of Shadowhunters.
That is the TV version of the movie and book The Mortal Instruments.
Yes. It's because the movie did not spark the franchise that they wanted, so they're figuring, why not do the Game of Thrones route and do a TV show? On Thursday, skipping Wednesday, because there's not really too much on there that intrigued me, at 10 p.m. on USA is the series premiere of Colony. At 10:30 on Comedy Central is the series premiere of Idiot Sitter. Yeah. And then at 11 p.m. on IFC is the third season finale of The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. I'm going to talk about the show when we come back from this, when we're done with this. On Friday, January 15th at 3:01 a.m., Netflix has Degrassi, The Next Class, the complete 15th season. And at 10 p.m. on HBO, you have the 14th season premiere of Real Time with Bill Maher. On Sunday, January 17th, again skipped Saturday because there wasn't really too much on. At 9 p.m. on TBS, you have the series premiere of Angie Tribeca. This starts the 25-hour marathon that they're doing of the first season of Angie Tribeca.
Now, as I understand it, it's only 10 episodes, so it's going to be replaying those episodes a few times during the marathon.
Yes, because, and do the math here, but so on Monday, January 18th, at 1:30 a.m. is the first season finale of Angie Tribeca on TBS. So you could do your math there and figure out how many episodes there are between there. I don't want to do the math right now because I'm doing other things. And also on Monday is the second season premiere at 10 p.m. on BBC America of Almost Royal. That is the fake reality TV show about some British royalty they're just really just British actors. Actually, no, one's American. The girl's American, but the guy's British. And really funny, they just act like they're like 32nd or whatever, like 67th or something like that in line.
Yeah, they're like Borating the audience, the people that they're talking to.
Yeah, it is really funny. And then, and now the pull list. This is one of the segments that I love the most because I love comics and I'm almost caught up. Oh my God. Can you believe it? It's a miracle. And there is an honorable mention on this list because I forgot to mention it, but Secret Wars is finally ending. Issue 9 is coming out this week. So if you've been reading all the Secret Wars stuff and you're just like me, you're glad that it's ending, then especially since the fact that they have every, like almost all the stuff that's post-Secret Wars out, and they're like, oh, what? They're hinting at stuff back here, but what is it that's out? DC Comics has the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 of 6. Great, fun little miniseries right there. Green Lantern Corps Edge of Oblivion number 1 of 6. And then Robin War number 2 of 2. This is the end of the Robin War series or event that they did over at DC with We Are Robin, Grayson, Son of Robin, and then there was tie-ins with
Son of Batman, you mean?
Or Son of Batman, yeah.
And with Jason, or
there was tie-ins
Red
with
Hood and the Outsiders, or whatever, Red Hood and Arsenal now.
Yeah, that one, yeah, Red Hood and Arsenal was in there, and then there was tie-ins with the Teen Titans book and Gotham Academy. Marvel has Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1, All New, All Different Avengers number 3, and Illuminati number 3. I'm really liking Illuminati number 3. I'm not going to lie. Illuminati, I should say, not just number 3, but that's a fun book right there. I'm almost going to dare to say compare it to Superior Foes of Spider-Man. That's my comparison right there. And then over at Image Comics, we have Citizen Jack number 3. Freaking love this book. It is hilarious. It is out at a perfect time too with all the political stuff. I could see Trump being Citizen Jack. Codename Babushka, The Conclave of Death number 4, Descender number 9, and Huck number 3. Want to talk real quick about Huck? It's actually a good book from Mark Millar. That's hard to say for a lot of people.
Mark Millar, when he loses the cynicism, mm-hmm. can be a very prolific writer and can emote things in his stories. And I like that Mark Millar. I don't like a lot of his other stuff. And I think even then, he can still maybe go a little bit off the rails too much sometimes. Yeah. But Huck has looked pretty compelling.
Yeah, Huck, I mean, and this is coming from a dude who I started reading. I liked MPH. I liked the first part of Jupiter Circle, but then when they did the prequel thing, Jupiter's Legacy, I'm like, no. So I'm not reading any of that. But then this one, I'm like, all right, this is interesting. It's a dude who has a superpower, but he, instead of being like Superman where he's all public about it, it's just he's going to do everything he can to help people who need help.
People in his own little town.
Yeah, yeah. But that is curtain calls, because the only thing on Starts and Stops is that the Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Everything is like on the bubble, and so is Border Town, and that's really it. There's another, I think something from ABC, but I forget what it was. There's not really too much moving on since things are just starting to get back in next time.
I really did enjoy the first episode of Cooper Barrett. Doesn't it have one of the guys from The Hangover in it? Doesn't it have the least interesting guy from The Hangover is in it?
Yeah.
But it had that air of The Hangover mixed with a Parker Lewis can't lose kind of feel, which I know mm-hmm. is a reference you probably don't get. Mm-mm. But it was a 90s, early 90s Fox show. It came out the same season as they tried to do, oh, actually 80s. They did Ferris Bueller's TV series based off of the movie and pissed all over the movie in the first episode, and so that show went to shit. That had the sister was actually played by Rachel from Friends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was in that. And that show ended real, real quick.
Yeah.
And Parker Lewis, which was on at the same time, gained far more success, even though they were very similar in premise. Parker Lewis was just a lot more fun and wasn't, like, talking smack about Matthew Broderick and the star of its movie in the very first episode. Always keep that in mind, people. If you're trying to cash in on a film by making a TV series about it, don't talk shit about the film to the people who you're trying to get to watch your crappy-ass show. And maybe make a better show, too.
Ass. Yeah. But no, yeah, Cooper Barrett is really good. It's got a lot of potential there. But I wanted to talk about Todd Margaret, and then if we got time, we can hit on oh, there was something else I want to talk about. Gallivant. On Gallivant, if you've been watching that. But Todd Margaret, did you ever watch Todd Margaret?
I tried to watch an episode of Todd Margaret, and it just didn't grab me.
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept when it first came out. And David Cross has even said seasons 1 and 2 are self-contained.
Yes.
He did it to where that was his beginning and that was his end. Where you go from this, like, I don't even want to say he was a middle manager. He was like this low, maybe barely a manager at this company. And then eventually he just somehow gets his way up and up and up to where he's over in England and he's got this bigger job and all that. And then he's just making bad decisions after another where you keep going. Why? You just want to smack your head and go, why? Why make such dumb decisions?
Yeah, and see, that's part of the issue that I probably had is that I don't even know that I can only handle so many shows like that. I have a problem watching shows where it's just people being stupid or those painful to watch situations. Like, I don't watch Louie, which I think follows that to a certain degree. I didn't watch the original version of The Office, and I always had a hard problem with the American version of The Office whenever it dealt with Michael Scott, because yeah, he would make those kinds of just dumb, outwardly stupid decisions, and you're supposed to feel some sort of empathy for him, or you're supposed to get schadenfreude from the fact that he's just doing terrible things. And it's like, I don't really go for that. I don't go for that with Larry David's shows or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not for me.
But here's the difference with that. Like, with Michael Scott, he's just messing up a paper company. By the end of season 2, you had Todd Margaret starting a nuclear war with him being captured or sent over to North Korea.
And see, that's the thing, is with Michael Scott, they would have gotten there, because the last episode that I really remember cringing through was when he had promised these kids scholarships.
In high school, these
scholarships, and then it would go and basically say that he didn't have any money for them. That was like, God damn it. You know, how fucking far can you take this shit? It's already stupid beyond belief when it comes to him. I don't really empathize with that kind of storytelling.
Yeah. No, it's, but so that's season 1 and 2. This is season 3, and IFC has actually done something very interesting here where they aired the first 3 episodes last week, and then they're airing the second 3 episodes, so it's only 6 episodes total, this coming Thursday. And the titles actually have a very interesting premise to me, because it's Todd Margaret 2, The Decisions of Todd Margaret, The Decisions of Todd Margaret 2, The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret 1 and then 2. And so the first episode started off really interesting for me because it acknowledged everything from seasons 1 and 2. But they did it was all a dream thing. But the difference is he's now coming across to everyone that was in the dreams, and he's like, oh, wait, you're this. They do a really funny thing because Spike Jonze was in seasons 1 and 2. They changed his character, or the same character, but he's now being played by Jack McBrayer. And they do the whole thing, and because, you know, Spike Jonze, Jack McBrayer, completely different people, completely different personality types. And so there's a scene in the beginning of the first episode where he's like, you look different. What's wrong with you? He's like, and Jack McBrayer's like, I had my teeth whitened. As he's his smiley self, it's hilarious. The other part I think that you'll like is Osgood's in there from Doctor Who. The actress who plays Osgood is in here as his secretary. And I'm like, so they're going, she looks so familiar. Why do I know her from? And I'm like, oh, she's Osgood. That's why.
Oh, that's where Moffat fucked up.
Yeah. But it's been enjoyable for me. It hasn't gotten to the point where he's making stupid decision, and now, he's just joined North Korea and he's going to blow up the world. It's still fairly smarter than that. I find this really enjoyable. I think you will really... This you can try. You don't have to have seen everything beforehand because they explain it all in the beginning, like the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit of it is that for people who didn't watch the first two seasons or maybe like me who weren't into the first two seasons can give it almost a fresh start.
Yeah. That is Todd Margaret. And then real quick, since we have a little bit of time, I want to talk about Gallivant.
Oh, I also had one more thing I wanted to read.
Oh, did you? Okay, yeah. I want to hit real quick on Gallivant because of the fact that I mentioned the pilot episode or the second season premiere episode had the other name of Suck It, Cancellation Bear. TV by the Numbers has taken account for that, and they made their own numbers according to how we know this whole thing, and it was hilarious. I'm sitting there reading this, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. But yeah, Gallivant, I'm enjoying the show. I feel like it is at this perfect time for it where, there's not really anything else on. Like, everything's coming back. And even then, it's like, okay, whatever. But ABC has decided we're going to take a break from Once Upon a Time or whatever else airs on Sunday night. Let's air Gallivant. And it's, to me, I find it brilliant.
I watched the first two episodes of the season last week. I haven't watched the one that came out last night yet.
The two that came out this week or this week.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the other thing is they're speeding through them like they usually do. I still enjoy the show. I think that there is sort of a disconnect. Like I forgot so much of what happened last season,
mm-hmm.
and they get you up to speed, but then in those first two episodes, it's not like things really change. So it's just kind of, all right, here's where we were stuck at the end of last season, and we're still stuck there by the end of this first hour. They go on a fucking complete tangent in the what is essentially the gay bar.
The Enchanted Forest.
Yeah, which was great. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really loved that whole scene. I loved the music and everything. I loved how totally clueless Odmundson's character was in the thing. It's great. It's still fun, but it's just the story isn't really there. That's sort of where it's lacking.
But here again, I don't really think it necessarily needs a story.
No, I think it absolutely does. I standing around singing songs and everything is a great fun show.
Yeah.
But look what happened to Glee. You know, Glee was great in the first season or for the first half season of like there was a goal, they were working towards something, they were introducing characters and building up the cast and making strides towards something, and then it had nothing to do after that, and it was just it got blatantly ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
and would just have episodes where like, well, we want to include these songs, so let's just try to make some stupid ass story around these songs. No, how about we don't do that? Especially if you're not paying the artist for the songs that you're using anyways. Be that as it may, I like Gallivant, but I think Gallivant works better when it's a smart show. Yeah. And the songs are fantastic, and the acting and the people doing it are all great. Absolutely. But you've got to still be smart. You can't make it so that your audience is just kind of like, just along for a ride that doesn't go anywhere. It's like the Penny Pony outside of Meijer. No, that doesn't work. You really need to land everything. You got a second season. You're lucky you got a second season. And I feel lucky mm-hmm. that you got a second season. Don't make me regret it. Don't make me regret watching you. So continue on.
Oh, Corey, you with your regional jokes. but yeah, so... I'm gonna assume that the thing you want to talk about real quick is the Dweezil Zappa via Zamata.
Via Zamata. Yeah, I have no idea what that title entails. I had known that Dweezil Zappa had a new album coming out, and I think it was supposed to drop in maybe February or something. I'm not 100% sure. But a couple weeks ago, I was looking up a bunch of my Dweezil stuff on my Google Play account, and all of a sudden there was a new album available. I'm like, holy crap! So I grabbed that real fast. And so here's the history of me and Dweezil. I fell for Dweezil's music, actually for a video from him, back when he was a VJ on MTV, so mid-80s. Mm-hmm. He was probably like 15 or so, and they did a music video, and I only caught it once. And I don't even know what song it was for. I think it might have been Gotta Get to You from Confessions. But in the video, there was the H&R Puffin Stuff creatures, and I think he was dressed up as one, so he's actually at one point playing guitar with a three-finger glove as one of the characters. It was just totally neat. A couple years later, I actually found the Confessions album
mm-hmm.
on cassette and listened to that thing like crazy. When I came out to California with a friend of mine to visit over the summer a few years later, we played that cassette the entire time on the way here, the entire time on the way back, and then the cassette finally broke. Cassette just died. It said, enough, no more. I have been listening to all of his music since then. The couple albums he did with his brother Ahmet, Z, they did Shampoo Horn and Music for Pets. I've listened to all of Dweezil's other single stuff and everything, and a lot of the stuff he's done more recently has been the tours where he's playing his dad stuff out on stage. His other albums have mostly been more just music and not songs. I like Dweezil as a songwriter. Not necessarily his singing voice so much, although he's got a really good voice. But I just like the way that he writes with other musicians and the way he performs. And I like what he brings across in music and how it's just very weird and off a little bit from other things. So one of the songs on the new album, for instance, is called Malkovich. And it's basically John Malkovich just reading this weird Malkovichian shit and just like talking in the way that he normally talks, which is just so deeply disturbing for some reason. You don't know why. And the song of it is there is no song. He's just talking, and then we get to the chorus, which is just, you know, Dweezil and the guys singing, Malkovich, Malkovich, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's stuff like that. But the rest of the album, there are actual songs, and he gets this really hard rock singer on there to do this one tune called, oh, it's not On Fire, it's the other one, Dragon Master, which is just totally deep, badass, kind of like, you know, Dragon Master is the master of disaster and everything. It's just so much fun. I love his stuff. If you ever get the chance to listen to Confessions, if you can find the album, he does a version of Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. Originally, he had Ozzy Osbourne sing on it, but they couldn't get Ozzy's clearance from his record company. So instead, he wound up getting Donny Osmond to sing it. And then it has six different guitar solos from six different guitarists at the time. So Warren DeMartini, Nuno Bettencourt, just like all these crazy people. Six guitar solos on a Donny Osmond cover of the Bee Gees. You cannot get more badass than that. It is one of the greatest things of all time. And then they did Return of the Son of Shigunga Gunga, which is brilliant. I cannot describe it to you. Just go fucking find it. I will drop it in a Dropbox right now so you can listen to it. So Via Zamata is not quite at that level, and I think maybe part of it is the fact that it's a lot of stuff that he's written at different times and kind of did some new stuff but also brought in some stuff that he'd written in the early 90s to kind of piece it together to make an album. It depends on how much time he has put into it. The efforts of what he can do and wants to do at a point in time kind of sets things apart. I really wish he would do more stuff with his brother again, though. Yeah. The Dweezil Ahmet stuff is something to behold, and probably just some of my favorite songwriting in the world. He's an amazing guitarist. He's that guy who learned so much crazy shit from Steve Vai and, you know, just managed to get even wilder because of his dad's influence, because of Eddie Van Halen's influence and everything. He just screams. He's technically incredible, but unlike a very technical guitarist like Yngwie Malmsteen, who's only about technicality, Dweezil knows how to let himself go and have fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, he makes guitars do sounds in a way that, like, Brian May does. Like, you listen to Queen and you listen to Brian May, and it's essentially, it's like all this instrumentation and stuff that you wouldn't realize is a guitar, because Brian May is just playing all this different shit. Dweezil does a certain degree of that as well. It's not quite the same, but it is that kind of like the big sounds and stuff. He's just layering track upon track upon track and doing things that, again, you listen to, you're like, wow, I didn't know a guitar could do that.
Yeah.
He can do that.
No, that's cool. So I think that's just going to about wrap it up here for us. You can find us at our webpage at elsners.com. You can send us mail@elsners.com. That is not going to change throughout the, once we merge with the Galactic Netcast. And you could watch all of our stuff, or you could like our Facebook group, facebook.elsners.com. And you can subscribe to all of our past shows by visiting the Elsners YouTube channel at watch.elsners.com. And you help us out, because we're going over to the Galactic Netcast. So we want you to help us help you. By going supporting them on Patreon at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. It's a very, you don't have to do a lot of money, because it's only that we're doing it all monthly. It's not like, oh, hey, per episode, when we're a network that releases like 10 episodes a week, so we're going to ask you for money 10 times or weekly or anything like that. No, it's just monthly. We're not asking for a lot of money to where we can all quit our jobs. But if you'd like to do that, by all means. I mean, I'm not going to stop you. That's all I'm going to say. But
if you happen to be the Powerball winner, I'm just saying, invest in a podcast network.
And there are cool things that we are doing. Like there is the quarterly Google Hangout with us knuckleheads. And the other hosts on over at Galactic Netcasts, where, you know, we'll hang out and you'll hear us be completely stupid, at least me be completely stupid, and try to talk about stuff and all that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm fucking brilliant.
But yeah, Galactic Netcasts, you can also find them at their website at gncast.com, where you can find such great, wonderful shows, like I mentioned before, like Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Adventure Party, Weird World Weekly, Alien Invasion, Podcast of Terror. No, it's okay. I love Podcast of Terror.
Also, we have the brand new Exploring the X-Files, which is just debuting its first episode today.
Yeah. Yeah, by the head trivia geek himself, was it Sean Murphy?
Yeah. No, Sean something.
I can't think of Sean's last name.
Yeah, you're thinking of Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
Sean Burns.
Sean Burns. Sorry, I have Slack. I had closed Slack because he started talking about, it's going to distract me, close it.
Yeah, the same.
But yeah, so I guess all that's left to be said is we record Else Nerds every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. West, and it's like 2:30, I believe, British time, so you could figure it out all around the world. And this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production. We will see you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.